Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
It is Open Forum today on Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for joining us for this second hour. Open Forum gives you an opportunity to call with any question you might have about the Catholic faith or life or practice or any religious question you might have at all, really. So if you have a question, please do not hesitate to ask. 888-318-7884 is the number. And as I mentioned last hour, the phones do fill up quickly during Open Forum. So give that number a ring and we'll try to get you in this hour. 888-318-7884. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and our guest this hour is Patrick Madrid. Patrick hosts a morning show every morning on the Immaculate Heart Radio Network, 3 hours every day, actually. Maybe he's the hardest working man in Catholic radio. I don't know. I haven't met them all, but he's got to be in the top few. Patrick Madrid, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Cy. It's always great to be back with you. And may I say to you, you're doing a great job as the new host of Catholic Answers Live. Enjoy listening.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much, Patrick. And I put a little Facebook note on today that you would probably be tweeting during the show. And so people should check out your Twitter at Patrick Madrid. I always want to say patrickmadrid.com, but that's not it. You just go to at Patrick Madrid on Twitter.
Right.
Do you think you'll be tweeting at all during the show today?
I can try, yeah. I tweeted that I would be on the show, so yeah.
All right, very good. And so how hard is that, Patrick, really? I mean, every day, 3 hours on the air, and it's crisp, and you're always covering interesting stuff, and that, isn't that like...
Thank you. I guess. Well, I enjoy it. I mean, I suppose if I didn't love it as much as I do, you know how it is, you love what you do. If I didn't love it as much as I do, I could see where 3 hours might seem daunting. But for me, I'm actually kind of disappointed every day when the 3 hours is over and the show ends. There's still more yet to talk about. So I look forward to every day that I get to do the program.
And often you will continue, I wouldn't say continue the conversation, but you'll post stuff via your Twitter account that is connected to the show. Like maybe you mentioned a book or something. So I'm like, does this man have like 8 arms or something? what would you say? Wait, so you, it's a general interest show. So people can, it's Catholics, but they can talk about anything. What would you say are the things that people most want to talk about these days when they call you?
Obviously, as you say, it covers a lot of territory. The morning show that I do, it covers politics and technology and current events and oddball stories. There's a lot of God talk, too. I mean, I am thankful to have a lot of listeners who are not Catholic, so a lot of atheists who listen. Yeah. We have Mormons who listen, many Protestants and others. So it's a wide variety of topics. But I would say most people are grappling with some kind of life issue. It could be everything from, hey, my kid is being hassled in school because he believes in God and the atheist kid is telling him that he's superstitious. How can I help my son, talk back to the atheist? It's a lot of that. A lot of times it gets into family issues or people are wondering about things about God or about the Bible or about the Catholic Church that they heard and they didn't know if it was true, or that they themselves have questions that they're grappling with. So it really is an interesting mix of eclectic questions and topics every single day.
And you've been, I mean, you were here at Catholic Answers for a time in your life. And so you've,
8 years.
You've been really from the ground floor, which I kind of think of the current kind of movement of Catholic radio as having its roots in the middle of the 1990s. Not, there were Catholic radio stations before that, but when Mother Angelica kind of said, I'll give you radio program, you just go out and start a radio station. Mm-hmm. So are you amazed when you look around the country now and see how many Catholic radio stations there are now?
It's truly astonishing. We're not where we need to be because, let's say, for example, in the Protestant world, there are probably, I'm going to guess, there's probably 7 or 8 times as many radio stations, if I had to guess. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not quite that big of a gap, but it's a big gap, and many times over. And so we're not where we could have been and where we should be, but I'm certainly grateful to all the pioneering radio people from Mother Angelica forward who really did through their blood, sweat, and tears, all the hard work enabling us to have something close to 500 stations now around the country.
Wow.
All Catholic radio stations all told. So I think it's very exciting. And I know you do, too, because you're a big part of it as well with this program.
I am, but I'm not a pioneer in the way that you were, Patrick, or some of the folks around were. I mean, I think of Doug Sherman, the founder of Immaculate Heart Radio, where you are. It's amazing when he'll tell a story, for example, like about just the technical difficulties of getting Catholic radio and how they had to go through all these things to just figure out how to get the signals where they needed to be and all that. And it's you know what impresses me, though, Patrick, is I mean, I know you are one of the pioneers of it. But what I have to say, as much as that impresses me, what really impresses me about it is that it's a movement of the laity with their local clergy that's spontaneous in so many places, you know, whether it's in, you know, I suppose, you know, Spirit Radio here or Ave Maria Radio there or individual radio stations other places. People just do it at the it seems that the Holy Spirit moves and people do it and the thing just grows.
It does. Yeah. It has taken on a life of its own. And of course, I believe that's the work of the Holy Spirit who has breathed into Catholic radio a kind of vitality that wouldn't exist if it were simply up to us. And when you call me a pioneer, I must say, you know, I played a and still continue to play a very minor role. The people who really did the hard work and have been doing it for a lot longer than I have, they deserve that kind of credit. I don't consider myself one of the real old timers in that regard, but I'm certainly grateful for all the hard work that they've done to get us to where we are today.
So you're calling Jerry Escher an old timer? Is that
basically
really?
That's what I'm saying.
Because that's what it sounded like.
I hope he's listening.
Well, when you're on, I'm sure he is listening. 888-318-7884 is the number. And speaking of stations, that here's one, Real Presence Radio in South Dakota.
Yeah.
Pamela from Real Presence Radio in South Dakota, you are on with Patrick Madrid. What's your question?
Hi, sorry. Hi again, Patrick.
Hi.
Hi, Pamela.
First of all, regarding the homeless mother and son from last hour, if she's still listening, St. Vincent de Paul may be another charity that could help her.
Very good.
Well.
That's a very good point. Thank you.
Okay. Now, my comment is regarding Rosemary's call from last hour about Muslims and their God. So, sorry, Patrick, for dragging you into Jimmy's conversation. But
that's okay.
Jimmy said that we worship the same God, and I know I've heard that before. I've heard the other side on Catholic Radio, too. I believe that Muslims do not worship the same God as Christians. No. Yes, we both believe that he's creator, but I think that's where the similarities end. Our God is a God of love. Theirs is a God of violence. He is hate. It's one of a slave and master relationship who commands death to those who won't convert, as opposed to the true God who never forces himself on someone. And I believe their God is truly Satan in disguise. Also, those considered terrorists are really Orthodox Muslims because they faithfully follow the teachings of Muhammad. And those that are peace-loving Muslims, they are not truly Orthodox Muslims. And we know that, you know, in a Muslim country, they are in danger as well as Christians because of that. So I'd like to get your opinion on that, Patrick.
Sure, I'd be happy to. By the way, your accent is lilting in my ears. Let me just say on a personal note, one of my daughters, my lovely daughter Bridget, she and her husband and their six children live in South Dakota. So every time I'm out there to visit and I hear the Great Plains accent that I hear in your voice, it reminds me of my daughter. She may be listening right now. You never know. Well, I would approach the topic this way. Let me say, I am deeply sympathetic to what you're driving at. In other words, there's no question that the understanding that Muslims have of God is so radically different from how we as Catholics understand God and his nature. I want you to understand right up front, I'm sympathetic to what you're saying. And I agree with you. There is a dramatic and, as I say, radical distinction between a loving God who forgives and saves and draws us to himself and is humble to the point of being born in a manger, et cetera, versus a God who enslaves and does not love and does not save and is interested seemingly only in owning people as slaves. I agree with you. However, this is why you're wrong. There is no other God up there to worship. There is only one God. Everything else is either, and you mentioned Satan, and he's, of course, not a God, as you know. He's a creature, an angelic creature, but he's not a God. So there are people who worship either non-existent gods or they worship as a false god, Satan himself. But there is no other god up there to worship. There's only one true God who has revealed himself fully in Jesus Christ, and we know him to be triune, one God in three persons. So the flaw in your argument, as passionate as you feel, and as sympathetic as I am to the point that you're making, the flaw is that they can't worship a different God because there is no different God. They either worship the one true God who made heaven and earth, who made the entire universe, or they worship a fictitious idea of a God who's not really there, or they worship Satan. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say they worship Satan. I would not say that myself. Not because I'm afraid of saying so if I actually thought that, but I don't think that. I think what we've got here with the Muslims is an example similar to that of Jews who do indeed worship the same God we Catholics do. They worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He is the creator of the universe. He is utterly unique. He is the one God by nature. And yet they misunderstand him because they have rejected the fullness of revelation about him. They do not accept Jesus as their Messiah. They do not recognize that God is triune. But that doesn't mean that they don't therefore worship the one true God. So I would say that Muslims, as deeply flawed as their understanding of God is, they do in fact worship the one true God, although their understanding of him is, as I say, so radically different from ours. That's my answer to your question. And I hope you take it in a spirit of respect, because I'm saying it to you respectfully. I'm not trying to like put you in your place or anything, but I think we have to get right down to that issue. There really is no other God up there that could be worshipped other than the one true God.
Thanks, Pamela. We have to go because we have to take a break, but we'll be right back with more. Patrick Madrid is with us this hour on Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum. Any question you've got about the life or faith of the Catholic Church is welcome. 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll be right back.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The Christian faith is under constant attack today in numerous ways, but the attack that does the most damage is the one that asks a deceptively simple question. What if Jesus never existed? This is exactly the tack taken by some skeptics today, and make no mistake, the freewheeling and often fact-free nature of many internet sites has allowed this way of thinking called mythicism to spread far and wide. The skeptics come with arguments to cast doubt in numerous ways, attacking the dating and accuracy of the canonical gospels, and arguing the church left out other gospels that would have told a different story. The good news is that there are answers to each and every one of these charges. Good, solid answers. That's why Catholic Answer Studios has just released Jimmy Akin's new DVD, Why You Can Trust the Gospels. It's a powerful presentation in which Jimmy takes on the skeptics and refutes them point by point, revealing how evidence from non-Catholic sources and even tiny details in the Gospels that you've never noticed before show how the Gospels are a true and accurate record of what our Savior said and did. Order your copy of Why You Can Trust the Gospels today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting the shop at Catholic.com or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Patrick Madrid is our guest this hour on Open Forum here on Catholic Answers Live. Any questions you've got on faith, religion, morals, Catholic teaching, we are happy to take. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and the number 888-318-7884. But Patrick, I got to let you know, we have a guest here in studio with us, Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers.
How are you, gentlemen? Thank you.
Hi, Chris.
It's good to talk to you both. I just want to give a quick cruise update, and this is a perfect time, of course, because Patrick Madrid is one of our featured speakers. And as everyone knows, if they listen to this program, we are sailing from Montreal to Boston June 3 to 10 this summer. For all the information, you can visit CatholicAnswersCruise.com. And the theme of this cruise is the church in the new world, or the church in America. And Patrick, I know that you're going to be talking about a couple of things, including the North American martyrs, I assume the Jesuit martyrs there of North America, and also one of the peculiar, uniquely American religions, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or what we call Mormons. And so you'll give us a little preview of one or both of those.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the North American martyrs, I will chronicle the saga of these heroic men, these Jesuit priests who came to Huron territory and Iroquois territory and gave their lives, not only figuratively, but literally, to evangelize these Indian tribes. And they paid with it with their lives. There's something we can learn about them and from them when we face our own version of persecution and hostility today. I'll be drawing out some of those parallels. Also, as you mentioned, I'll be speaking on the topic of Mormonism in a respectful way, but I'm going to highlight the key distinctives between what Catholics believe about the nature of God and what it means to be saved and what it means to go to heaven, with the Mormon concept of God being an evolving being who was once a man on another planet and who was judged worthy to become a god. We'll talk about the doctrine of eternal progression, why Mormons build temples, why they do temple work. As I say, it will be a respectful and not an anti-Mormon kind of presentation, but the idea is to help Catholics understand how to dialogue more effectively with their Mormon neighbors.
For when they come to the door. Right.
When they come to the door. Because after all, they come to the door and they say that we're wrong. So we should have a good answer when Mormons say that. And that's what I'll be furnishing in that talk.
And of course, Patrick, you're always a great guest on these cruises, and we're looking forward to seeing you. Tim Staples will be with us. I'll be there. Yeah. My brother, Father Paul Check. And because we have now almost 180 people coming, we've had to add another priest, a brilliant young priest from the St. Philip Neri Oratory in Toronto named Father Michael Eads, and I know people are going to love him as well. I'm not surprised, Cy and Patrick, that the numbers are so high for this cruise, because this is a beautiful part of the country. There's so much history and Catholic history there, so many magnificent buildings. And, you know, Montreal and Quebec, it's like going to Europe without the long plane ride. So folks, CatholicAnswersCruise.com. Now, we're almost to the point where we're going to bring Cy along. We need a few more people to sign up. So go to the website, CatholicAnswersCruise.com, and the promo code is Cy.
C-Y.
C-Y, yep. Right? And
I always spelled it S-I-G-H. I must have had it wrong.
I'm afraid we used that. We used that joke last week, Patrick.
You heard it from me first.
Oh, no. Since I was like 5 years old, I've been hearing that.
So I'll bet.
I'm familiar with it.
So, and anyone who signs up using that promo code PSY gets a free shore excursion when we go to Halifax, and that's going to include a private mass at St. Mary's Basilica there. CatholicAnswersCruise.com. This is going to be a great trip, folks, but we are running out of cabins, so don't delay signing up. All right, gentlemen, back to work.
Thank you, Chris. And put in that promo code PSY, because I also will carry your bags on and off the boat. That's what's going to happen there. Patrick Madrid is our guest this hour. And Patrick, I'm looking at a picture of you online. We're having trouble with the Skype. Is that right?
So no, we are.
I'll just talk to the picture.
I have a funny cruise story. Can I tell you a funny cruise story?
Yes, please.
Okay. I don't know if Chris Check wants to stick around for this one.
No, he's listening. He's right here.
Out of the studio. Yeah.
No way.
All right. True story. This involved me and Carl Keating. And we were checking into one of the Catholic Answers cruises several years ago. And I had brought with me, it packed in my luggage, I had brought a very nice bit of wine that I wanted to consume with my lovely wife, Nancy, while we were on the cruise. Now, that is frowned upon in the world of cruises, because they want you to buy their stuff on the cruise line. So I'm all sneaky and I have it tucked away. And little did I realize that we had to go through this very intense security check. and they have metal detectors, and they're putting the bags through. It's kind of like an airport. So I go through, I put my bag through, I go through the metal detector, Nancy and I walk through, we get a ways away, and Carl Keating, the founder of Catholic Answers, is with us. And suddenly, you hear that they're flagging a bag. Hey, we got one over here. We got one over here. And it's like, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. So then that like they start calling, whose bag is this? We found this bag here. Whose bag is this? And I'm thinking, okay, I'm busted. And I don't want to be busted in front of Carl Keating because you know,
does?
He's my pal. And I didn't, you know, the embarrassment was bad enough. So I was so happy when it turned out to be Carl's bag. They busted Carl, not me. I got in with the wine just fine, but they busted Carl because he brought an iron to iron his clothing. And that's even worse because they make more money on you sending your shirts and your stuff to the cleaners, so they make money on that. So I felt so great. I've never told this story publicly, but I felt so great because I got my wine in and Carl got busted for the flat iron.
And it tells us about your priorities, too, you and Carl.
I think, Patrick, that the cruise lines have made their peace with people sneaking a few bottles aboard. And so they usually say, you know, you can put two in your luggage or something like that.
Oh, you know this from experience?
Yes, okay. I have tested the limit of it every time.
This is not Baptist radio. This is Catholic radio.
That's right.
And we are 888-318-7884 is the number. Let me just get my computer screen straight here and I'll know who I'm going to be talking to. Viviana in Mesquite, Texas, listening on 910 a.m. You are on with Patrick Madrid. What's your question?
Yes. In the past hour, I heard you speaking of James, that he might be the stepson of Joseph. But I was wondering how could that even be if I thought Joseph is Chase.
Okay. I will answer that question. I'm just curious, is that something that came up in the first hour with Jimmy?
It did, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so, Viviana, I'll answer it as best I can, but forgive me that I didn't hear it when it came up, and I don't know how Jimmy answered it, but this is how I would respond to it. We talk about St. Joseph, especially like in the Litany of Saints, St. Joseph referring to Mary, her most chaste spouse. So St. Joseph certainly was chaste, and there was no intimacy physically between St. Joseph and the Blessed Virgin Mary, but there is a longstanding and well attested to view among many of the church fathers that Saint Joseph was a widower when he married the Blessed Virgin Mary. And therefore, one way to explain how certain men are called the brothers of the Lord, never the sons of Mary, but for example, in Matthew chapter 23, where James, Joseph, Simon, and Jude are called the brothers of the Lord, it was thought by these church fathers that a good explanation for that would be that Joseph, from his earlier marriage, his wife having died, that he had some sons. So that when he married the Blessed Virgin Mary, legally speaking, those sons of his prior marriage, they were reckoned as the brothers of the Lord, but they were not siblings of his because Mary did not have other children. That's why you hear that discussed about St. James, but it in no way would suggest that St. Joseph himself was not utterly chaste in his marriage with Mary.
Okay.
Does that clarify it well enough?
I've just heard that they're, those who are called brothers of Jesus were actually like his cousins, because back then they were, your cousins were so close to you, they were like your brothers.
Well, yeah, that is referring to how in, not just in Hebrew, but in other Semitic languages, there was not a specific word for cousin like there is in Greek, for example. And so close relatives were referred to as brother, when the brother, in fact, might be your nephew or your uncle or your cousin, and the same would be true for sister. So maybe that's what you're thinking of. But as far as those men who are called the brothers of the Lord, two of them, for example, we know from the same passage, they were actually sons of Mary, but not Mary, the mother of Jesus. They were James and Joseph were sons of Mary, the wife of Cleophas, also known as Clopas. And we see her with the Blessed Virgin Mary at the foot of the cross in John chapter 19. So there's an example of close relatives, or at least close friends, who are called brothers, but they were not blood brothers.
Thank you very much, Viviana, for that call. Patrick Madrid is our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum, and there's still a half hour before we end. So if you've got a question, 888-318-7884. Any question you've got on the life or faith of the Catholic Church is welcome. We'll be back in just a minute with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
What do the Pharisees, pagan emperors, the Nazis, and the Quran all have in common? All were enemies of the faith who admitted crucial facts that undermined their own position. In his new book, Hostile Witnesses, How the Historic Enemies of the Church Prove Christianity, author Gary Machuda looks at dozens of Christianity's most notorious foes from biblical times through the 20th century and draws from their words and deeds surprising testimony to gospel truths. Rich in research and written with clarity and force, Hostile Witnesses is a unique contribution to Catholic apologetics, one that speaks with special urgency to a modern world in which the faith is once again under attack. If you love apologetics, you need to order your copy of Hostile Witnesses today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area.
Coming up tomorrow on EWTN Radio, Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Hosts Jerry Usher and Debbie Giorgiani are doing something new in Catholic radio. Listeners helping each other to live the faith. It's social media for the ears. Take Two with Jerry and Debbie airs at noon Eastern weekdays. And coming up right after Catholic Answers Live today, Mother Angelica talks about temptations from the devil and how mortifying ourselves prevents us from falling. Right here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open forum today. Happy to take your questions. There are folks out there watching on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, and Periscope, and we thank you all for watching and happy you're here with us. And if you want to watch a particular program, any program you want, that we've started archiving them all there on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope. You can just go back and look at a program if you would like the visuals. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. And so, Patrick, I thought I'd share you one question from YouTube Live that someone typed in.
And we'll, hit me.
All right. Brian on YouTube Live asks, what happened to the apostles? How did they die? And how do we know this information?
Well, we know it from the ancient recordings of the lives of the apostles that come to us outside of sacred scripture, but nonetheless are very important because they tell us, for example, that during the reign of the Emperor Nero, that two apostles, in the case of St. Paul and St. Peter, St. Paul not being one of the 12, we're told where they were martyred and when they were martyred and how they were martyred. So in the case of Peter, he was martyred by being crucified upside down in Nero's circus, which at that time stood, if you were looking at St. Peter's Basilica today, you would have been staring at it, kind of an empty space to the right of Nero's circus, and it was in that area where there were many graves of people who were killed in the gladiator fights and such. That's where St. Peter was buried. And the circus stood just to the left of that, and that's where St. Peter was killed by inverted crucifixion. St. Paul was beheaded, and it was either on the Via Appia or the might have been the Via Flaminia. It was one of the two roads leading out of the city of Rome. And that's where St. Paul was beheaded. He received beheading because he was a Roman citizen. So if you consider the writings of the earliest church fathers who chronicled these stories of the martyrdoms of the apostles, that's where we gain that information. It's not scriptural, but it is authoritative and it is historically verifiable. Some of them we don't know. For example, I'm not sure how Barnabas was martyred. I'm not sure if every single apostle, if we have hard historical data, but the church's tradition is that they were all martyred. And for an overview of that, I would refer anybody to the Catholic Answers edition of the Catholic Encyclopedia and just pull up the article for any given apostle, and it will list what we do know about how they died.
Thank you very much, Brian, watching on YouTube. I hope that was helpful to you. We go now back to the telephones. Paula in Chicago, Illinois, listening on WSFI. You are on with Patrick Madrid. What's your question?
Okay, thank you so much. My question has to do with complete happiness in heaven, the communion of saints, and the, whether or not the saints have contemplation or witness our sins here on earth. Can sorrow be experienced in heaven? And if so, will there be an ending to that once our world as we know it comes to an end? I know in heaven there is, you know, they live outside of time and space. Mm-hmm. But during the history of mankind, Jesus and Mary have appeared to many saints throughout history with a sorrowful countenance, expressing great sorrow over the sins of mankind. I'm wondering, how can that be if they're in a state of perfect happiness in heaven? And do the saints that we ask to intercede on our behalf share in our sorrow over our sins?
That is a very theologically astute question you're asking. Several layers of question there. The ultimate answer is yes, as Jesus promised in the Beatitudes, that when we see God face to face, all our tears will be wiped away. So how do we explain then that, as you say, some of the apparitions indicate that there is sorrow, that the Blessed Virgin Mary is crying, for example, when she appears to the children at La Salette in France, or there is sorrow that the Blessed Mother expresses in Akita in Japan, a lesser-known Marian apparition, or at Fatima when she very solemnly tells the children to pray the rosary, do penance because of great calamities that will come upon the world. The best I can tell you, not having ever experienced this myself, nobody this side of heaven has done that, is that in a way that we don't fully understand, the saints in heaven are not sad. They're not sorrowful. They're not weeping. They're not mourning. They, as they used to say in the 50s, they've got it made in the shade. So they are completely blissfully happy. However, they also, it seems, share in concern for us because they know, to the extent that God permits them to know, things that are going to happen in this life. And you may say, well, how do we know that? Well, Jesus said, for example, that there is great rejoicing in heaven when even one sinner has a conversion. And if you consider the, what do we have now, 6-7 billion people on the face of the earth, and let's say at any given moment, maybe millions and millions of people are converting, Jesus says, without telling us how it happens, he says that even a single conversion they know about in heaven, that's by God's grace. Or we take the, in the book of Revelation, the martyrs who are under the altar in heaven who are waiting patiently, we see there almost a kind of exasperation or maybe a bit of anticipation on their part. When, O Lord, are you going to avenge our death? So they apparently know that those who killed them and martyred them have not been punished yet, and they're crying out, asking God, when are you going to strike them or punish them for us? God tells them to be patient. So the best we can say is that without understanding how they can be aware of these things and not be sorrowful, and at the same time express to us a kind of sorrow, like Our Lady appearing, I guess all we can do is say they're both true, but one does not cancel out the other. It's not like they don't care. It's not like they're so happy up in heaven that they don't care about us, but at the same time, it's also not as though they're so worried about us that they can't enjoy heaven. I wish I could say more, but not having been there yet myself, I can only say that.
Does that help you, Paula?
It does. Is there anything we know of that that once our world as we know it ends in time and space, that there is a difference then in heaven?
Well,
you know, is all of the sorrow, since everyone either goes to heaven or hell, and sorrow is and sinfulness is complete, will that be, I don't know. I always wondered, is there then like complete happiness in heaven that there wasn't before?
Well, not exactly. And I don't want to suggest that there's some lack of happiness in heaven, because there's not. But the finality, if you read in the book of Revelation, chapter 21 and 22, and you see the new heavens and the new earth, and you see that death and hell and all those who are damned are poured into the lake of fire, and everything concludes, and there is no more suffering or of any kind, the ultimate definitive conclusion is described there. But the between now and then, and I should add one other thing, even in heaven now, they don't live entirely outside of time. Only God, in an absolute sense, lives entirely outside of time. Even the angels, theologians say, live in a kind of what's called aveternity, which is a type of eternity. It's more like eternity than time. But for example, the blessed in heaven, they got to heaven at a certain point. So it's not like they've always been in heaven. There's an eternity stretching ahead of them, if you want to think of it in those terms, but even that's still time-bound. But they don't live in an absolute sense outside of time. Once all of the earthly and material realm concludes and there is a new heaven and a new earth, then we shouldn't think about their time in heaven as being an endless procession of moments. And how we can think about it, it's very difficult to explain. But it's not going to be in the sense of time that we experience now. I hesitate to say anything more, only because since I haven't been there yet, I can only tell you what the church thinks it's going to be like, but we don't know with absolute certainty how to describe it.
Well, thank you, Paula, and I hope that is helpful to you. We go now to Mary in El Cajon, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Mary, you are on with Patrick Madrid.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question.
Sure.
I live in the San Diego area in El Cajon, but in downtown or Old Town, they have this house called the Whaley House. And they have tours for tourists and whoever wants to go. And it has some sort of a haunted legend to it. And as Catholics, we know that, you know, people in heaven usually don't come down and haunt places. People in purgatory may, but maybe not under those circumstances. They would want to ask for prayers, you know, not just to entertain people. And so the only thing left, as you've mentioned in your programs, I hear you in the morning, is the negative entities. So the question is, would people who go there unknowingly, not necessarily Catholics, but just anybody, be in some sort of danger because they think it's some sort of an entertainment place and probably nothing happens when they're in there? But the fact that if there is something attached to it because of whatever has happened there in the past, you know, even unknowingly, would people be in some sort of danger in the same way that you're supposed to avoid palm readers and, you know, tarot readers and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there is something to be said for the fact that one could be in jeopardy if, even without realizing it, somebody were to go to a place like that for entertainment purposes in a way similar to using a Ouija board or a seance or, as you say, tarot cards and things. That's real. And the portals to the demonic realm are real, even though sometimes they're dressed up in fun and exciting ways. They're still dangerous. The possibility that I foresee, or I see rather, certain possibilities. One is that this is a true manifestation of an evil spirit, a demonic spirit, or one of the damned who are permitted by God to have some manifestation of their existence in this place. The other possibility is that it's a soul in purgatory that is requesting prayers. And there is a good book. It's called Purgatory by Father F.X. Schuppa. I'm probably mispronouncing his last name, but he was a Jesuit priest in the 19th century, I believe. And he compiled legends of the saints and chronicled things that the saints had to say on souls in purgatory, and some of them are downright scary. I mean, souls that were permitted by God to appear asking for prayers, they scared some of the saints that they appeared to, at least at first. So I can see that as a possibility. And then a third possibility, or I'm losing track now how many I've gotten to, this would be a purely natural possibility, and that would be in a way that we don't fully understand yet, much like the invisible things that move because of magnetics, where a piece of metal could move and nothing seems to be moving it. We don't know why. Well, once we understood magnetism, we could explain that from a natural perspective, a scientific perspective. I think it's possible that in a way that we don't understand yet, that people who have been in a particular place at a particular time, maybe some kind of presence, almost like a photographic negative or an echo, is in some circumstances perceived, not because the soul is there now, but because the soul was there at one point. And I don't know how to explain it, but I could see where there could be a natural explanation for something like that that's not supernatural. I don't know if we'll ever know something like that, but it seems plausible to me that that could be another way to account for something like that. But back to your original question, yeah, I mean, if there's any demonic activity whatsoever, then people are running a risk that I certainly wouldn't want to run by going into a situation where, in fact, it's a demonic spirit.
Thank you very much, Mary. Thank you, Patrick, for that. And we will be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum. More questions on the life and faith of the Catholic Church when we come back.
Catholic Answers. Our success depends on you.
We hear it every year. The perennial question, what are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Did you know that by investing as little as 5 minutes a day, you can take on a Lenten practice that will both build up and inform your faith? A Daily Defense is the perfect book for your Lenten journey. Jimmy Akin takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 18:21, Peter asked Jesus, Lord, if my brother sins against me, how often must I forgive him? As many as seven times? Jesus answered, I say to you, not seven times, but 77 times. He then went on to tell him a story of a servant who was unwilling to offer to one who was indebted to him the same mercy he himself had just received. This matter touches us far more directly than we might at first think. Who do you refuse to forgive? Or better, who do you resent? Or better, who is it that really gets under your skin? Bullseye! Chances are such a person is not asking to be forgiven. But are we willing to forgive such persons should they ask? Better to give thanks for their presence in our lives. Gratitude humbles us, removes resentment, and heals us on all sides. God likes our gratitude, and He always deserves it. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Open forum on Catholic Answers Live today. If you have any question about the Bible, sacraments, doctrines of the church, the popes, the history of the Catholic Church, we're happy to take any of them. Patrick Madrid from the Patrick Madrid Show on Immaculate Heart Radio each and every weekday morning is our guest this hour. And Patrick, we go now to Jovi in Houston, Texas, listening on EWTN. Jovi, you're on with Patrick Madrid.
Hi, Si. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Jovi.
Hi, Jovi.
I have a question about the gospel lesson Sunday. The priest in our parish interpreted the five husbands of the Samaritan woman that Jesus was referring to as the five gods that the Samaritans were worshiping. But I read in one of the Catholic Answers article that I got through my email, taking literally the five husbands that she was divorced 5 times. So are both interpretations acceptable or what?
Well, the five gods one, I would say that's not out of the mainstream, and it's not consistent with the traditional understanding of that passage. The traditional understanding and the patristic understanding is that that woman had lived with five different men, and whether or not she was in some formal way married to them or not, the fact is they were not lawfully her husbands. And the point of Jesus saying, when he said to the woman, he says, go bring your husband. And she says, I have no husband. And Jesus says, you're right, you don't have a husband, because the five men you've been with have not been your husbands, and you don't have a husband now. So the context suggests that he was speaking about her marital state, not about any, I would argue, kind of more fanciful idea about five gods that were worshipped or anything like that. I prefer to stick to the traditional understanding of this passage, and it sounds to me as though that's so speculative as to be, and I don't even see how that would be even helpful from the standpoint of preaching, because obviously nobody in the room or in the church is going to be worshiping five different gods, unless you count Facebook and ESPN and money and other things that people do worship. But I think from a pastoral standpoint, the emphasis on the irregularity of her marital situation seems to be the basis of what Jesus is saying.
Does that help you, Joby?
My question. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank
you. You're welcome.
Very much. We go now to John in Las Vegas, Nevada, listening on,
Nevada.
Nevada.
It's Nevada. Yeah.
Patrick.
You're obviously not from Nevada.
No, I'm not. But I know that that's how I'm supposed to pronounce it. And
right.
And yet I fall into sin every time I say that word. But John is watching on Facebook. John, you're on with Patrick Madrid.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I just had a quick question about the papacy. It's my understanding that Peter is the rock referred to in Matthew 16, and the Catholic Church has the papacy because Peter was the bishop of Rome. And recently, an Oriental Orthodox friend of mine told me that Peter was also the bishop of Antioch, and I Wikipedia'd it, and I found it to be true, so I was just wondering why the church is centered in Rome and not like in Antioch, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason is that the death of Peter occurred in Rome. He ministered in Rome for about 25 years before his martyrdom, and so it was his death there that resulted in his successor being the next pope, the successor of Peter, not in Antioch, but in Rome. And that controversy, or a controversy that brought that to the fore, occurred when the Emperor Constantine moved the seat of the Roman Empire from Old Rome to Byzantium, which became known as Constantinople, which today is known as Istanbul. And a controversy arose when the archbishop of that city, where the imperial court was, he said, well, now that the seat of the empire is here, now I'm the pope. And the answer was, no, it doesn't have anything to do about where the emperor is. It has to do with who is the successor of Peter in the see or the diocese where he died. And that has been and always will be Rome.
Okay, John?
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
John, if I may recommend a book to you, I'm a bit partial to it. It's called Pope Fiction, Answers to 30 Myths and Misconceptions About the Papacy. I wrote that book going on 20 years ago, and I have a whole chapter on that very topic, but I cover topic by topic in my book, Pope Fiction, all the many kinds of arguments against the papacy, this being one of them. So I'm glad you raised it. And if you'd like a whole chapter explaining that, you'll find it in my book, Pope Fiction.
Pope Fiction. I'll definitely check it out.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. And we go to Issa in Tampa, Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Issa, you are on with Patrick Madrid.
Hello. You were talking about St. Joseph had the son, and how it's possible that he could have had a previous wife. But I had always understood from the 12 tribes that if you were within that tribe, everyone there was considered a brother.
Well, that is true, but it's not exhaustive. And in the culture and in the times in which Jesus lived, it did not it wasn't restricted solely to those who are members of the same tribe, of the 12 tribes of Israel. So your naturally, your close relatives by blood, of course, would all be in the same tribe that you're in. But you could find instances like in Acts chapter 15 or in Acts chapter 7 where they would address each other as brothers when there was a whole crowd of people. And Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost, those are three chapters that come to my mind in which you've got the apostles, or in the case of St. Stephen in Acts chapter 7, who are addressing a variety of men from various tribes as brothers. So I wouldn't restrict it just to the sense that you're from the same tribe. It had a broader application than just that.
Thank you very much. Isa, we go now to Patrick, I'm just working through them because we have a short time left.
You're so setting them up. We're knocking them down.
There you go. Paul in Colorado, you are on with Patrick Madrid. What's your question?
Yeah, my question was on Unum Sanctum. Mm-hmm. And basically, it was that last statement about it's absolutely necessary for salvation that every human creature be subject to the Roman pontiff. Was just curious, does that mean if you're not Catholic, you're not saved, or?
Yeah, well, you're getting to the heart of, in Latin, a phrase called extra ecclesiam nulla salus, which means in English, outside the church, no salvation. And it's understood by the church that this is a, well, first of all, it is a dogma of the church that there is no salvation outside the church. Please know that. And the church reiterated that most recently in the Second Vatican Council's document on the nature of the church itself, the dogmatic constitution. And it said that somebody who knowingly, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the text in front of me, but somebody who knowingly refuses to enter into that church which Jesus Christ established, which is the Catholic Church, cannot be saved. So the dogma is certainly secure, but the understanding of what it means to be subject to the Roman pontiff can be, I think, understood more broadly today than it might have been understood before. And that gets to the question of people who, through no fault of their own, do not realize that they are subject to the Roman pontiff. In other words, they're not card-carrying Catholics who sit in a pew of a Catholic church on Sunday. Nonetheless, they cooperate as best they can with the graces that God gives them, and whether because of where they live or when they live or some other impediment, they, through no fault of their own, they're not able to know the fullness of the faith. The church teaches that they too have an opportunity to be saved, not outside the Catholic Church, not apart from the Catholic Church, not in some other way, but in and through the Catholic Church, but not necessarily with a conscious knowledge of this information that you or I are obliged to follow if we come to that realization. And the final thing I'll mention is, remember that these are laws, things that Jesus taught. They govern us, they restrict us, and we're bound by them, but God is not. God is sovereign. And so God can bestow mercy and grace and forgiveness and regeneration on anyone, whoever he pleases, however he pleases. So we have to keep that in mind too, that the church's teaching about no salvation outside the church is not intended to put God in a box and assume wrongly that he too is obliged to follow those same laws, because he's not. I hope that's helpful to you.
Does that help you, Paul?
I was wondering, what about other denominations that aren't, you know, that aren't Catholic?
Yeah, I think I've answered it as best I can in the time that I've got. I'll have to leave it at that.
Thank you, Paul, for that call. Thank you for everybody who joined us on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. And thank you to everyone who joined us via the airwaves as well. Patrick Madrid, you'll get up and do it again early tomorrow morning on Immaculate Radio.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, hours away.
And I'm looking forward, even though there's some hope in this statement, it's not of absolute certainty, but I am looking forward to seeing you on the cruise.
Yes, me too. I'm going to hope that works out. And if you want to see me in the meantime, Si, you can find me on Twitter at Patrick Madrid.
That is right, at patrickmadrid.com. And thank you for all the information on smuggling wine onto the cruise, too. I really appreciate that.
Just don't try it with an iron. They're going to get you.
I will. Carl Keating teaches important lessons.
That's right.
Thanks for joining us today on Catholic Answers Live. We'll see you again tomorrow.